Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Who are the greatest number 10s in NFL history? On this Best of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Warren Rogan of Sports Forgotten Heroes comes into the pig pen to try to help us find these most significant players to wear that jersey number 10 in NFL history. We have our results in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Tonight, everybody, we have a great opportunity. We're going to continue on our journey through the football numbers of the NFL, and we have all the substantial players that have worn those numbers. And tonight we are on the number 10, and joining me in this episode on the top NFL players to wear the number 10 is the host of the well-known Sports Forgotten Heroes podcast, Mr. Warren Rogan. Warren, welcome to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren, thanks so much. Glad to be here. The pig pen. Really looking forward to it. Great name.
Yeah, you better put those boots on when you're in the pig pen. You know, it gets sloppy in here sometimes, but we're going to be all right. We'll take care of each other here. But Warren, if you could just tell our listeners of the Pigskin Dispatch a little bit about your podcast, the Sports Forgotten Heroes. It's really a great program.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, I launched Sports Forgotten Heroes back in April of 2017. Was looking to get into the podcast world, and I was talking to some people who had their own podcasts at the time. Told them, yeah, it seems like an interesting thing to do. And they said, well, Warren, with as much sports knowledge as you have and your love and passion for sports, why don't you do something with that? And I've always been a fan of the history of the game. And I started researching, and it didn't seem like there was a lot of sports history podcasts out there. So I got to thinking, maybe something about sports history. And I ran some ideas by these guys. And, you know, I said, well, you know, I don't see much out there. And they said, Warren, if you're interested in it, then there's got to be somebody else interested in it. So I went ahead and launched it, Sports Forgotten Heroes. Figured I'd publish a new episode every other week. I pick Tuesdays. I don't know why, but every other Tuesday at 7 a.m., a new episode of Sports Forgotten Heroes is posted. And I'm into the hundreds now. Well, episode number 100, Pete Sampras. I don't do a lot out of the four major sports, but I thought, wow, for a topic for episode 100, if I can't have the actual forgotten hero on, who would make for a good topic? I got to thinking, Pete Sampras. No, I couldn't get Pete on there. He's actually, from what I understand, a pretty shy guy. And I did make contact with someone who recently wrote a book about Pete, a tennis journalist, guy by the name of Steve Flink. And he and I talked about Pete, my gosh, for almost 90 minutes. Wow. And you could go on and on. And, you know, Pete just might be the greatest American male tennis player of all time. And it's crazy to think that way. When you have guys like McEnroe and Connors and Agassi, even Jim Courier, and going back further, Arthur Ashe and Rod Laver. But what people don't realize is that Sampras actually won 14 Grand Slam events, never the French Open, but 14 between Wimbledon, the Australian, and the U.S. Open, which, was more than any other player in the history of tennis. And then along come Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and these guys are just blowing those numbers out of the water. But as far as American men are concerned, no one has done what Pete Sampras did.
Well, it's truly a great podcast. You know, the ones I've listened to, you just bringing back the memories, and some people I've never even heard of, and they are forgotten heroes, and yeah. You shed light on them and bring the nostalgia and the recognition to these folks that really did some amazing things and have some great stories. And we really appreciate you bringing those to us as listeners.
Oh, thanks so much. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's one of those, as I'm sure it is for you, Darren, it's a topic. I enjoy all sports. I'm sure you do, but you know, you focus really in on football, and it's something you probably live and breathe every day. So why not share your passion with other people who have the same interests?
Right. And you hit it right on nail on the head. Well, let's get into a little bit of football, shall we? Talking about the number 10s today. And what we want to do is we have quite a good starting point of there's some Hall of Famers that the Pro Football Hall of Fame has announced that wore the number 10. And I'm just going to go through those real quick here, and we can go into some more detail on them. But I want to come up with our top 10 that you and I agree on. And these Hall of Famers are probably a good place to start. First one we have is Johnny Blood McNally.
And I did a podcast on Johnny.
Did you? Okay. Well, this is good. We'll get to him in a second. Jan Stenrud, who we've had at some other numbers as Hall of Famer. Fran Tarkington, great quarterback there. Kurt Warner, another outstanding quarterback. Those four are who the Pro Football Hall of Fame say are in the Hall of Fame that wore the number 10. Maybe we'd like to talk about those four first, because I think they almost have an automatic bid on our list, I would think.
Sure. Why don't we start with Johnny Blood? He's really interesting because, you know, I did some research after you and I discussed what numbers I would talk about. And the reason I picked, no secret, I picked 10 and 11 because I'm a Giants fan, and number 10, Eli, number 11, Phil Simms. So I thought those guys would be pretty good to discuss with you.
What's interesting before you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have, there's three of you gentlemen that are coming on to talking. Three of you are Giants fans. I don't know if you, Larry Schmidt has had a couple episodes with us so far. He did number ones, and Dan Newman, who's on the Sports History Network on the Hello Old Sports, also a Giants fan. And you guys are all going after those Giants numbers, you know, the Lawrence Taylors and the Bavaros and the Phil Simms. So they were kind of, Dan and Larry were kind of disappointed when 10 and 11 were gone, but I told them.
There you go.
Warren's got those locked up.
well, when you come around to 53, I'll take that one too. Harry Carson, what a great, great football player, Hall of Famer. And, what can you say about 56 and LT? I mean, like they say, he revolutionized the position.
Absolutely, he did.
But, Johnny Blood's really interesting because, you know, I went back and looked at Johnny Blood, and his real name is Johnny McNally. While the Hall of Fame claims that he wore number 10, I searched and searched, and I don't see a number 10 on Johnny Blood. He wore a multitude of numbers during his playing days. None of them appeared to be number 10. If you go to a footballreference.com, they have them as 57, 24, 20, 14, 35, 26, 55, and 15. I don't see a number 10 in there.
I couldn't find it either.
but if the Hall of Fame says that Johnny Blood at one time wore number 10, I'll take the Hall of Fame's word for it. Yeah, he's a really interesting character, a gentleman by the name of Ralph Hickok, who was a journalist, reached out to me a couple years ago about Johnny Blood, told me he had written a book about him, and would I be interested in doing a podcast about Johnny Blood? Well, of course I'd be interested in doing a podcast about Johnny Blood for a myriad of reasons, one of which is the name Johnny Blood. What a catchy name.
Sure is.
Yeah, Ralph wrote a book called The Vagabond Halfback. And Ralph spent several years or a lot of time with Johnny, recounting so many stories, hitting the road with Johnny. And he put it all down in a book. Took him a few years to write it. And what an interesting character, beginning with the name Johnny Blood. He got that. He had college eligibility left after he'd played some pro ball, and he wanted an alias so he could go back and play some college ball. And that was a real common thing back in the 19-teens and the 1920s when the NFL and whatever pro leagues there were back then really weren't as organized as the league is today. And these guys would show up and use alias names so they could still play in college. And, you know, a lot of them were caught at one point or the other, and they were banned from ever playing college again. But Johnny, who also boxed a little, the story goes that he and another player, a guy by the name of Ralph Sand, they wanted to hide their identities and used aliases. And they were trying to come up with names, and they're riding a motorcycle or something like that and passed by a movie theater. And on the marquee was the movie Rudolph Valentino, star of Blood and Sand, and I know I'm going to get this wrong, Monsieur Bulcaire. I got no clue if I
got some pretty
clue.
Good French there.
Yeah. Well, Johnny looked up at the marquee and said, "That's it. That's our new names." And Johnny took the name Johnny Blood, and Ralph took the name Sand, and that's how they became Johnny Blood and Ralph Sand.
That is a good story.
yeah. But I mean, Johnny Blood was a heck of a ball player. I mean, he played every position. You know, he was a tailback. They all did back then. You know, you didn't have rosters of 53 guys. You had, you know, you were in the 20s, sometimes not even that. And Johnny played tailback and halfback and wingback and, you know, defensive back. He probably kicked the ball a little. And he played for a number of teams. His first team was the Milwaukee Badgers. Then he played for the infamous Duluth Eskimos. And I'm not sure, but I think I read at some point in the history of the Duluth Eskimos, and that's Duluth, Minnesota, where it is cold 364 days a year. I think it's summer on July the 4th. They only might have had one home game in their entire history, but they were a heck of a team. And then he played for the Green Bay Packers twice and the Pittsburgh Steelers twice. So he was a heck of a all around player.
Yeah, he was. He was a great, great athlete. Like you said, he was known for his having some uncanny speed for the time too. It really helped him out in his game. So yeah, definitely Johnny Blood McNally on our list of our number 10s for today. What do you have? Let's go to Jan Stenerud. Now we've talked a little bit about him on some other episodes of this podcast, but what a great kicker Jan Stenerud was.
Yeah, I think he made most of his career, you know, accomplishments, obviously, with the Kansas City Chiefs. For most of his career, he wore the number 3, and that was with the Chiefs. He wore number 10 with the Packers, and he played 4 of his 19 years with the Packers. And then he ended his career with the Vikings, where he also wore number 3. Man, this guy was something special. I think his longest field goal of his career was 54 yards, and he hit that a couple of times. I wrote down some numbers. Out of 558 field goal attempts, he made 373, pretty darn good. You know, remember back in the day, the extra point, you know, what, up until a couple years ago was set up where, the 7-yard line or something like that.
Right,
you know,
right.
7-yard kick, and he made 580 of 601 attempts. Only 21 times out of 601 times did he miss, and he made every extra point he attempted, 128 over a 4-year stretch. He didn't miss a single one. I mean, those are crazy numbers. But he was, you know, he was the Chiefs. He won a Super Bowl with the Chiefs, played, like I said, for 13 years with them, and he was a true kicker. He didn't go out, you know, like some of these guys and try to play these other, you know, other positions. He didn't punt. He was a kicker, and he was a heck of a kicker. For his career, inside 19 yards, he was 60 of 64. Inside 29 yards, he was 106 for 130. Inside 39, you know, when I say inside, that's 30 to 39. It was 20 right. to 29. He was 113 of 150. From 40 to 49, he hit just under 50%, going 77 of 150. And, you know, outside of 50, he tried it 64 times and connected on 17. I mean, you know, what do you say about the guy?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's a true Hall of Famer. I wish I had some pretty cool stories to tell you off the field about Jan Stenerud. But unfortunately, I don't.
Well, maybe our next Hall of Famer that wore the number 10, you do, because he was a New York Giant at one time, Fran Tarkington.
He was. Here's a good trivia question for you, for the people out there. Fran obviously spent a tiny bit of time in the booth on Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. You recall what variety television show he hosted?
Oh, I know, but I used to watch that show. That's incredible.
That's incredible. And interestingly enough, I think as we're talking about it, I'm just remembering there was a woman who was a co-host on that show. I think her name was Kathy Lee Crosby.
Oh, you're right.
And she was married, I think, for a time to Joe Theismann.
Might be the wrong quarterback you have there, or wrong football player, I think.
I'm not sure. I think, well, what do you know?
Wasn't Kathy Lee Gifford on that show?
No.
That's no,
Kathy
no.
Lee, no, this is Kathy Lee Crosby.
Oh, okay.
They're two different people.
I thought you were having fun with me there.
No. Kathy Lee Gifford obviously married Frank Gifford, but Kathy Lee Crosby, I believe, was a co-host of That's Incredible. Yeah, she was a co-host.
But she was Bing Crosby's daughter, I believe.
Yeah, and she was a tennis player as well. I think she played in Wimbledon a couple of times. And my gosh, maybe she wasn't married to Joe Theismann, but they were a couple. They were definitely a couple.
I did not know that. I don't know if you've watched Peyton Manning's program on ESPN Plus, Peyton's Places, since season 2.
Every once in a while, I've caught it. He's terrific.
He had a special on Fran Tarkington just a few weeks ago, and they brought up the That's Incredible, you know, brought up some great memories of course, you know, Tarkington's playing days, too, with both the Giants and the Vikings. But some interesting attributes of Fran Tarkington. So if anybody wants to see that, Peyton Manning does a great job on that. He's kind of a funny guy, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you know, Fran played, he came up with the Minnesota Vikings, then he went to the Giants and then back to Minnesota. Actually, he was drafted in the AFL by the Boston Patriots. What they call him, the Scrambler. You know, he was just this incredible talent. You know, he did what guys like Lamar Jackson do today, you know, running around. But it was more he was running around for his life as opposed to what today's quarterbacks do, where these are designed rollouts and designed running plays. Tarkington just flat out ran for his life. He played 18 years in the NFL, 13 with Minnesota, 5 with the Giants. He really didn't like playing in New York. He came in, I think he might have replaced Earl Morrill at quarterback, or Norm Snead, one of those guys. Oh, he was traded. He was traded to the Vikings from the Giants for Norm Snead. But, you know, a heck of a scrambler. He threw for 342 touchdowns over the course of his career. Also put up a couple of interceptions. I think it was numbers like 266. He ran for over 3,600 yards, scored 32 touchdowns. One loss record, he was 124 wins, 109 losses, and he led Vikings to three Super Bowl appearances. Unfortunately, he lost all three. He was 6-5 for his career in the playoffs. By the way, who's the only other quarterback to lead the Vikings to a Super Bowl appearance?
You got me there. I can only think of Fran Tarkington, Vikings being in the Super Bowl.
In the Super Bowl that Jan Stenerud appeared in, our other number 10, one of the other number 10s that we had discussed.
Right.
1969 Super Bowl IV, actually it was the 1970 Super Bowl 69 season. That always gets me confused. Joe Capp led the Vikings to the Super Bowl, and they lost to the Chiefs 23-7. And interestingly enough, I got a podcast on Joe Capp as well, episode number 40, if anybody's interested.
Okay, well, I'll definitely have to check that one out, because I thought all the Viking Super Bowls were all Fran Tarkington.
That's what everybody thinks. That year, Tarkington played for the Giants. In 69. Yeah, Fran was traded to the Giants and then came back to Minnesota, and he came back with a one of the most favorite Giants of all time, a guy by the name of Bob Tucker, who is a terrific tight end. But, you know, when you take a look at some of the numbers that Fran Tarkington put up, I mean, they're incredible numbers.
I mean, the 47,000 yards in that era of football.
Yeah, I mean,
that's phenomenal.
Yeah, he threw for 47,000 yards. And you're right. In that time, it was just this, you didn't do that twice. And people will say, well, what big deal? But twice he threw for over 3,000 yards, the first time in a 14-game season. And again, this guy was running for his life all the time. Sure, the Vikings had the Purple People Eaters, but that was defense. Their offensive line wasn't all that good, and Fran had to run for his life all the time.
You know, it was interesting in that Peyton Manning program that they showed. They were saying how he sort of opened it up for the quarterbacks of today, you know, the Lamar Jacksons and the Russell Wilsons. But then they showed a clip of Patrick Mahomes, the way he scrambled side by side of Fran Tarkington scramble, and they were almost identical. You would have thought it was the same person, just one was wearing a Chiefs uniform, one was wearing a Minnesota uniform, because they both had that, you know, backward scramble running towards their old goal line and then, you know, pivot real quick, and, you know, defenders are, you know, falling all over themselves. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, it really is. You could, I guess you could probably see a little bit of Fran in Mahomes. And, you know, you take a look at some of the crazy throws, these sidearm throws, these underarm throws, these, you know, shovel passes that Mahomes has. I think Tarkington did a bunch of that as well. He was a star at the University of Georgia. In fact, he's also in the College Football Hall of Fame. He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1987, a year after he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1986. His best season with the Giants, we know he had three terrific seasons with Minnesota, leading them into the Super Bowl each of those three seasons. His best season with the Giants came in 1970. You know, the Giants just weren't like they are today, just not a good football team. And in 70, He overcame an 0-3 start to win 9 of the next 10 games. The Giants were in position to win the NFC East that year going into that final week, but they lost to the Los Angeles Rams at Yankee Stadium 31-3, and that ended what was a real promising finish to a season that's so poorly. The Giants went 9-5 that year. You know, that was the closest the Giants had come to making the playoffs over that ridiculous 17-year hope. We are not going to go through another 17-year drought, although it certainly feels like it. And, you know, I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me, Darren, but I think that his 47,000 yards when he retired had to be, you know.
I think he was tops in the NFL when he retired with that number.
He might have been tops in the NFL at that time. You know, like we said, he was a heck of a scrambler. He rushed for over 3,600 yards. Seven times he ran for over 300 yards in a season. When he retired, he had the NFL career records for the most pass attempts.
Okay, well,
he's every bit a Hall of Famer. It might be one of the, if not the greatest number 10, certainly one of the two or three best number 10s of all time.
I agree. Well, as long as we're talking about your Giants, how about another Hall of Famer that wore the number 10 and also played for the Giants at one time, Kurt Warner?
Yeah, you know, he played for the Giants, but that's not who he's best remembered for. You know, what he did with the Rams and then later the Cardinals is what he's best remembered for.
Oh, the greatest show on turf.
He wore number 10 and 13 with the Rams and with the Giants and with the Cardinals. He only played the 1 year with the Giants. He was keeping the position warm for Eli. But, you know, what an interesting guy. And you could watch him on the NFL Network these days. But he wore the number 10 with the St. Louis Rams in 1998. But for the rest of his career, he wore number 13. Gosh, you talk about a guy who persevered during the course of his career. Kurt Warner, I mean, he wanted to make it to the NFL. I guess he didn't have the game at first. He was tried to make it with the Green Bay Packers. Comes out of a small school, Northern Iowa. Who's ever heard of Northern Iowa? You know, especially being a football power, and doesn't do too well with Green Bay. Is let go, and he goes to, of all places, the Arena Football League, where he plays for a team called the Iowa Barnstormers, whom, by the way, I think have one of the coolest helmets in the history of football. And he played for them for 2 years. And the numbers that he put up, while, you know, you can't really talk about the yardage because of how short a field Arena Football League played on, he did throw for 183 touchdowns and 43 interceptions. I mean, you know, crazy numbers. And I think, believe it or not, I think there is an Arena League Hall of Fame, and he's a member of that Hall of Fame. Oh,
I believe it. I mean, one thing I think the Arena League taught him is just that quick release. You know, you just for survival, you have to release the ball quicker. You're going to get killed. And I think that really helped him out.
Absolutely. And then, you know, he tried to make it back to the NFL, and he was, I don't want to use the term relegated, but he was assigned. He was assigned somehow or signed to go play for a team in the NFL Europe League called the Amsterdam Admirals. And he played for 1 year with Amsterdam. They went 7-3, and he threw for 15 touchdowns in those 10 games and just over 2,100 yards. Then he finally got his break with the St. Louis Rams. His first year, he was only 27 years. I mean, he was at an advanced age for in NFL terms for a rookie. He played for St. Louis that first year wearing number 10. So he played one game wearing number 10 and put up these kinds of Hall of Fame numbers. 4 completions in 11 attempts for 39 yards.
And he's in the Hall of Fame as a number 10.
Go figure. But as a number 11, holy smokes, with St. Louis, 35-15, a Super Bowl championship, threw for over 14,000 yards. You know, wow, what a, you know, won 2 MVP awards. Like I said earlier, he played for the Giants that one season. They let him go. He goes off to Arizona, leads them to a Super Bowl. They didn't win.
But he did throw one of my favorite passes of all time as a Steelers fan, though, to James Harrison.
James, who was it? Harrison ran the ball back?
You're right. Barely. He barely made it. He did.
Yeah, he needed a little bit of oxygen afterwards. And was that the Santonio Holmes had that crazy catch? But, yeah, I mean – what an arm for Kurt Warner. I mean, that guy, wow, what a career. You know, he only played, 12 years.
Especially getting such a late start, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, he makes it into the Hall of Fame. Like you said, it was the quarterback of the greatest show on turf. And he won the Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl, too, with the Rams when they lost. Didn't they lose to the Patriots?
I believe they did.
And he led the NFL in passing twice, you know, the touchdowns. He was twice the leader in rating. He won the NFL Man of the Year, the Walter Payton Man of the Year. He's in the Arizona Cardinals Ring of Honor. What else can you say about this guy? His career passer rating of 93.7. Jeez, what a career.
Yeah, he definitely took care of the ball well, too. That's for sure.
No doubt. I mean, he, yeah, what a career.
A quarterback. I always like to look at their touchdowns to their interception ratio, especially modern quarterbacks. And he was 208 touchdowns to 128 interceptions. So almost a 2-1, which is a pretty good ratio for a quarterback in the NFL.
Absolutely. Had a completion percentage of just over 65%. I mean, what a, you know, he's another one who didn't quite crack the 5,000 yard barrier, but 3 times he crossed 4,000. His first full year at quarterback, he went 13-3 and led the Rams to the Super Bowl. He threw for 4,353 yards and 41 touchdowns against only 13 interceptions.
As a nobody at the time.
Yeah, and he had a passer rating of 109.2. His best year might have been 2001 when the Rams went 14-2. He had a 68.7 completion percentage, threw for 4,830 yards, 36 touchdowns, and 22 interceptions, averaged over 300 yards a game, and had a passer rating of 101.4. The only other time he threw for over 4,000 yards was in 2008 when he took the Cardinals unexpectedly to the Super Bowl, going 9-7, threw for 4,583 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 14 INTs. I mean, guy was a star quarterback. I guess he just developed late and learned a lot playing for Iowa and Amsterdam.
I guess so. Well, let's take it on to our next quarterback, also played with the Giants. I think it's one that you've been waiting to talk about here for a while.
Yeah, you know, there's a case for Eli to be a Hall of Famer, and there's a case for him not to be. It's really interesting. You know, how much of the Giants' failure to make the playoffs over his last several years is really his fault. I think he gets a bum rap. I really do in certain instances. You know, Eli Manning threw for 366 touchdowns and, 244 interceptions. I have this discussion with a lot of friends about interceptions. And certainly, Eli, without a doubt, threw his share of interceptions. And you could probably say this about a ton of quarterbacks, but I really believe that Eli was snake bitten. Go back and take a look at how many balls he put right in the chest or in the hands of a receiver who then coughed the ball up into a defensive back's hands, and it counts as an interception. The NFL has got to go back and do something about that and make a judgment call on whether something is an interception or a fumble, or can they come up with a new category and call it an interception against the receiver. Even this year, looking at Evan Engram, some of those interceptions that Daniel Jones throws, those are balls that bounce off the receiver's hands. And again, it's not just Giants quarterbacks, it's quarterbacks in general. But I think that certain quarterbacks have been snake bitten. Eli's one of them. Yeah.
I really didn't think his ratio was that bad, though. I mean, he had 366 touchdowns in his career, only 244 interceptions. That's really not that bad of a ratio.
Exactly. But he gets this bum rap that he was just, you know, threw so many interceptions over the course of his career. And again, he really didn't. Now, maybe some of them were untimely, but, you know, 24 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, 21 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 35 touchdowns, 14, 30 touchdowns, 14. Even that last year when he went 1-3, he had more touchdowns than interceptions. Completion percentage, not the greatest, 60%, threw for 57,000 yards. I think the big knock against him is that his career record is 117 and 117.
That's something that jumped out at me. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, you know, he had several seasons, you know, especially the last three and 12, 5-11, 1-3. But, and actually, if you go back to 2013, he has 6 of his final 7 seasons. He only had a winning record once. That was 2016 when they went 11-5. But, you know, how much of that was his fault as opposed to a guy like Jerry Reese who couldn't put a team around him?
That's true. There's some truth to that. But, you know, I think the one thing that gets him in the Hall of Fame, I believe he will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know that he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think he will be in the Hall of Fame as his, you know, winning 2 Super Bowls. That does a lot for your prominence in getting into the Hall of Fame, I believe. And being an MVP of one of those Super Bowls definitely counts big.
I totally agree with you. He played in the Super Bowl twice. Won the Super Bowl twice, clutch performances in the fourth quarter. He's got more Super Bowl wins than Fran Tarkenton, another Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner, another Hall of Famer, Aaron Rodgers, a soon-to-be Hall of Famer,
Jim Kelly,
Joe Namath, Len Dawson, Johnny Unitas, Ken Stabler, Steve Young, Drew Brees, the playoffs, including the Super Bowl. He's 8-4 in the playoffs, 18 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 4 fourth quarter comebacks, 5 game winning drives. In 2007, what Brady did in this year's Super Bowl, winning all 3 games on the road and then going to Raymond James to technically win on his home turf, Eli in 2007, or the 2008 Super Bowl, again, confusing, went 4-0. All 4 of those games were legitimate road games. And I contend that if Plaxico Burress doesn't shoot himself in the leg, the Giants were rolling. They were 11-1. They were outclassing everyone. Yeah, anything can happen either way, but I contend the Giants were on their way to at least another Super Bowl appearance. They were 11-1. Plaxico is Eli's favorite target at that point. They go 1-3 down the stretch and lose in the playoffs. But I mean, Eli Manning led the Giants over the course of his career to 27 fourth quarter comebacks, 37 game-winning drives. And let's not forget his durability. 210 games in a row, and of that, I hate to say it, jerk coach McAdoo doesn't bench him.
Yeah, that was atrocious.
Yeah, and trivia, who started the game to break Eli's streak?
I don't know. You got me again there, Warren. I'm not sure.
Geno Smith.
Oh, that's right. That's Good right. I should have known that.
Smith.
Yes.
He didn't have the worst game. They lost to Oakland in Oakland. Geno went 21 of 34 for 212 yards and a touchdown. But Eli came back and started the next week. And, you know, let's also take a look at the 2011 season. The Giants went 9-7. Eli didn't finish every single one of those games. And, you know, the Giants sat on the ball a couple times. He could have thrown for over 5,000 yards, came up 67 yards short. He threw for 4,933 yards. I mean, Eli Manning, and that was the year, by the way, that he threw that 99-yard touchdown to Victor Cruz.
Well, that, I mean, that's definitely, I think Eli Manning is on our list. So let's just review where we are right now. We have the Hall of Famers, Johnny Blood, Fran Tarkington, Kurt Warner, Jan Stenerud, putting Eli Manning on that list of our top number 10s in history. Well, now I think it gets a little trickier because now we've got a lot of quarterbacks that were good quarterbacks, but maybe not great quarterbacks. And, a few other positions. We have some wide receivers in there that maybe have some consideration, and a few kickers,
and a decent linebacker. Sorry, Giants fan Brad Van Pelt. He won a Super Bowl with the Giants as well.
Okay, well let me go through a list of quarterbacks, and maybe there's some that you know, touch your fancy here that we want to talk about.
Sure. I got one in particular, but go ahead.
Okay. I've got a list. I've got Trent Green, more than number 10.
Sure.
Jim Zorn of the Seahawks fame.
The Seahawks were just an awful team, and Zorn had a big, big arm.
Yes, he did. Don Strock. Jay Schrader.
Yeah.
Cordell Stewart.
Yeah.
Shad Pennington.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much who I had as the quarterbacks that probably, I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that were number 10, but probably the substantial quarterbacks that were number 10 that would possibly one of those make our list or a couple of them make our list.
Well, I got one you didn't mention.
Okay.
Steve Bartkowski.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Steve Bartkowski was a terrific quarterback. You know, he played 11 years with the Falcons. And 1 year with the Rams, he wore number 10 his entire career. He once led the NFL in touchdown passes. It was 1980. He had 31 touchdown passes for a team that he took to the playoffs, the Falcons, who went 12-4. He had he led the league in completion percentage at just over 67. Led the league in quarterback rating 1 year, 97. That was 1983. I mean, he went 123-121 with the Atlanta Falcons. Threw 154 touchdown passes. Yeah, he threw a lot of interceptions too, 141. But he had a big arm, threw for over 24,000 yards for his career. I thought that Steve Bartkowski, is he a Hall of Famer? No, but he is certainly a terrific, more than a serviceable quarterback.
Oh yeah, he's definitely starter material. You know, a franchise quarterback he was for the Falcons. You know, let's say, because he definitely met that bill. You know, Zorn had sort of similar numbers. I mean, it's amazing you said that, because I'm sitting here looking at Zorn. He also had 141 interceptions, but only 111 touchdowns.
Yeah.
For less yardage, only threw for just over 21,000 yards. Had a starting quarterback record of 44-62, but on some, like you said, really atrocious teams for Seattle just coming into the league when they were still in the AFC. And, team.
The thing about Jim was, it was right around 81 or 82 that he took a backseat to,
David Craig.
David Craig. And, so his final 5 or 6 years, he wasn't a starter. He also played for Green Bay and Tampa. And he wore number 10, by the way, with Seattle and with Tampa. But the guy had a big arm. He played for some awful teams, although twice he did finish over 500 with Seattle in 78 and 79. He went back to back with 9-7 seasons. Let's see, 3,200 yards, 3,600 yards, 3,300 yards. Those are decent numbers at that time for a team that really wasn't that good.
All right. Well, before we get locked into saying we want to choose, you know, some of these quarterbacks, let's talk about, I mean, we have a pretty good class of, I have four wide receivers I'd like to talk about. Three of them are still playing, and I have DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, DeSean Jackson, and somebody you mentioned earlier, Santonio Holmes.
I mean, my gosh, DeAndre Hopkins, what in the world? How you talk about a dysfunctional team? The Houston Texans have got to be one of the most dysfunctional teams in all of sports.
I mean,
what in the world? I don't get it.
Especially with a young quarterback, you know, that's making big plays. You want to have receiver there, you know.
It's mind-boggling. This guy, what's his name, Jack Easterby, who was a pastor or a reverend or some sort of religious figure, not cutting down religion in any way, shape, or form, for I think it was the Patriots or something like that, or the Chiefs, and he worked his way up to running a football team, and he let Bill O'Brien, under the McNair family, trade DeAndre Hopkins for nothing, for David Johnson, whose career is so passe, and he lets DeAndre Hopkins leave and go to the to the Arizona Cardinals for nothing, nothing. It's mind-boggling. They traded DeAndre Hopkins for what?
No, but he's definitely outstanding player, outstanding number 10. Same with Tyreek Hill. I mean, what a talent, what a speedster, and
he is so fast and so quick, shifty. You almost have to wonder what the Chiefs, well, we know what the Chiefs would be without Patrick Mahomes. It wouldn't be the same team, obviously, but would they be the same team without the Tyreek Hill? The guy is, well, let's see, this year, 1,276 yards and 15 touchdowns, including incredible. A 75 yarder. I mean, the guy is, he's a phenom. He's an absolute phenom. And, you know, where did he go to school? West Alabama. Where is that?
Yeah, Andy Reid really found a gem there when he got Tyreek Hill. I mean, if you just think about the Super Bowl we just had, how the Buccaneers played a great defensive strategy, you know, running two deep safeties the whole game just because of the threat of one Tyreek Hill.
Exactly. And, you know, still, I mean, he had 7 receptions for 73 yards. You know, it's not Tyreek Hill-like, but it's still pretty darn good in the Super Bowl. He averaged over 10 yards a reception. It's not like he didn't do his game, you know, what he was supposed to do. And, you know, Tampa's defense was nothing to sneeze at.
No, they took him away. That was a great strategy they had. All right. So we talked about Tyreek Hill. We talked about Hopkins. Now, DeSean Jackson, probably not, I mean, a great receiver, but probably he and Santonio Holmes were probably not in the same class as Hopkins and Tyreek Hill.
No, and I hate to say it. I'm DeSean Jackson, what a thorn in the side of every New York Giants fan. he burned the Giants so many times. But, you know, DeSean Jackson had a heck of a, you know, I don't want to say he had a heck of a career. He's had a really good career. But, you know, he'll be 35 next year. I mean, the guy has caught passes for over 10,000 yards. He has scored 56 touchdowns. You know, he's a heck of a receiver. And I don't, you know, I don't know what they were doing in Philadelphia this year. I know that he was hurt for some of the, you know, sat out for some of this, but I don't think they made the best use of his talent really over these last couple of years that he's been back in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I agree. And then we have Santonio Holmes, you know, goes from being the MVP of a Super Bowl and, you know, Mr. Everything for the Steelers, and does a couple knucklehead things. Steelers trade him for a 7th round pick to the Jets, and the sort of career sort of falls off at that time too, which he could have really had a much better career than he did. You know, he did have a good career, but probably could have been
no doubt. I mean, once you go to the Jets, that's it. That's doom.
Okay. Now you said you had a Mr. Van Pelt you want to talk about at the linebacker position.
Well, Brad Van Pelt, he was a member of, and you know, I misspoke. He did not win a Super Bowl. Brad played for the Giants for a number of years, and he was part of a team that. No, you know what he did? He did play for the Giants. In the 85, no, he didn't. I'm sorry. He was with the Giants through the 83 season. Then he went to the Raiders and then on to the Cleveland Browns. He played 11 years for the Giants. He was just a solid, solid football player. He was an outside linebacker, and he was part of a team of linebackers that the Giants had. Early going, we called them the Big Blue Wrecking Crew, and it was Brad Van Pelt, Lawrence Taylor, Harry Carson, and my gosh, I forget who the fourth linebacker was at that time.
Just those three sounds like a wrecking crew right there. That's something I would want to be running through the line at.
Yeah, the Giants were they had one heck of a defense at that time. They're nothing. Oh, the other linebacker was Brian Kelly. The Giants they were the team that always had these great linebackers. And frankly, I can't remember the last time the Giants drafted a linebacker. I sure am glad they signed Blake Martinez this the last offseason. Maybe this coaching staff realizes or recognizes the value that a good linebacker can bring a team.
Linebackers
is sort of a dying breed.
It sure has. Okay. Well, I think we're sort of at that point in this episode where we got to come to facts here and try to choose our top 10 number 10s. I think we're already settled on our first five. And just to review, you know, Johnny Blood, Fran Tarkington, Kurt Warner, Jan Stenerud, and we both agree Eli Manning is in that group. Who of the other folks that we've discussed should be our other five to round out our top 10?
Well, you know, when you look at it and you really consider it, you know, there's another guy who you didn't mention, Roy Jarella, and there's Pete Stoyanovich, but
There was Orlande Mare and Chris Barr.
I think you might have to put DeAndre Hopkins at number number six, number five.
I'm thinking you're right. Probably, I think DeAndre Hopkins is probably that sixth spot.
Yep. And then depending on how his career goes, I might go with Tyreek Hill at seven. I'd go with Bartkowski at eight.
Yeah, I think you made a compelling case for Bartkowski. I could agree with that one too, and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, and then I'm a Jim Zorn fan. He's up there, and I would put him of the guys that we talked about, I'd put Jim Zorn at nine and Santonio Holmes at 10. But, you know, again, you still had a guy who won a Super Bowl, Jay Schrader, who we didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. Roy Jarella was a heck of a kicker for the Steelers, Stoyanovich. And, you know, Emmanuel Sanders is a heck of a wide receiver who could break into that top 10 as well.
But, you know, I thought about Schrader when we were doing our research here. But Schrader's Super Bowl that he won, wasn't the starting quarterback. Doug Williams was a starting quarterback for the Redskins when they won that. Schrader came in, I think, a year or two after that and became the starter with Washington. But he was on that team.
Okay.
So I don't think Schrader was a serviceable quarterback, a good quarterback. But I don't know that he's makes the top 10 of the number 10s all time. My book.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. You know, it's after you get by those Hall of Famers, it's a pretty tough one.
Well, I like that, you know, after, of course, Eli Manning on there, going with DeAndre Hopkins and Tyreek Hill, Bartkowski, Zorn, and do we come up with a 10th one? That's what we're still discussing.
Yeah, that's where I put, oh my gosh, who did I just say? Zorn.
Oh, Santonio Holmes is who you're.
Santonio Holmes of the guys.
Maybe because of the Super Bowl MVP, Santonio Holmes gets that. And I could agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I think we did it. I think we found our top 10. And
there you go. It's definitely a good top 10. Definitely strong at the top.
I believe so. And I want to thank you very much, Warren, for joining us for this, these top 10, number 10s in NFL history. And we appreciate you being on.
Absolutely. Darren, thank you so much. Anytime. I really enjoyed it.
Wow. Warren Rogan does his homework on his NFL players. And what a great discussion we had there. And we are going to have Warren back. You can catch him on the Sports Forgotten Heroes anytime on the sportshistorynetwork.com or on his website. But you can also catch him here in just a day or two. We're going to have him on with the greatest number 11s. He wants to come back and talk some more at the Pigskin Dispatch on these Football by Numbers series, and we're thankful for him. So once again, we thank Warren for joining us. We thank you, our listeners, for joining us, because we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to share, you like the show, you want to keep it going, if you just go on that front page of pigskindispatch.com, there's a pull down tab for buy me a cup of coffee. Just throw a little bit of change in there, and we will send you our list of our top 10s and top 5s and top 12s that we've been putting together for our Football by Numbers series. And we'll send that to you as a special honor and gift for thanking you for your contribution of any size to the Pigskin Dispatch to help with our operating expenses and help us keep bringing you great guests just like Warren Rogan today. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the Official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the Official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.